Welcome to the Small Church Leadership Podcast, the podcast where we are helping the small church fulfill the big mission. My name's Brian. I am a fellow small church pastor in the trenches with all of you wonderful people. Hey, speaking of wonderful people, if you guys know any that like to be on a podcast, let me know. Until then, I'm stuck with Joey and Colby. How you guys doing?
My life is dope and I do dope things.
And I'm blessed.
And this podcast isn't one of those dope things.
I take it back. You guys are wonderful. I love you.
Yeah, this is dope.
This is good, man. So, Small Church Leadership Nation, we've got a great episode for you today. Today, we're going to be talking about six core truths of a healthy culture. Six core truths of a healthy culture. So, as we get started with that, guys, like, what pops into your mind when you think about a healthy culture?
It would be an organization I'd want to be part of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever been a part of a healthy culture?
I have.
Cool. You want to tell any stories on a healthy culture?
United States Air Force.
Okay.
Hoorah!
Hey, one of my favorite people.
I don't know if we were completely healthy. But.
One of my favorite people in the world retired from the United States Air Force.
Yeah?
Yeah. What's Bob Ross.
Yeah, Bob Ross. Yeah. Yeah. Did he retire?
He did.
Oh.
Yeah, he retired.
I thought they kicked him out.
Yeah. Yeah, they kicked him out for being angry and aggressive. Also, yeah, can you picture that? Hey, now you're going to sit down right now. And you're going to do me some happy little push-ups, okay? No, he was an Air Force for forever and ever. And I got another dude that I like that retired from Air Force, too. His name's Colby Schartzer.
So that'd be me.
That's you, man.
Yeah.
So you experienced some health in that culture
from time to time? Yeah, we had some very unhealthy at times, too. But, yeah. Just depending on the workstations.
Yeah. And that seems to be like a thing that happens with culture. Yeah. It's not like you can weld it.
Right.
You know, like I'm a guitarist, and I like to think about, like, if I get all of my strings in tune, I could just weld it, and they'll just stay in tune forever. But that's just not how it works. Mm-hmm. You have to constantly be working with it to make sure it stays in tune, and that's how culture is. You can't just weld it to be perfect. It's kind of, static. It moves from place to place. Joey, what about you, man? When you think about healthy culture, when you just think about culture in general, in terms of your life, what comes to mind?
I think I would like to be part of an organization that's got a healthy culture, but if I'm a part of it, I don't know if it'll stay a healthy culture. So that's my dilemma.
Yeah,
with it's healthy like culture.
If you want a perfect church, don't show up because as soon as you do, it's not going to be perfect. Yeah. I hear you, man. So I think it's important to understand and at least kind of define what culture is before we get started into these six core truths. And man, there's a great book called Cracking Your Church's Culture Code by a guy named Sam Chand. That's Chand. You hear us talk about him quite regularly on this podcast, but he says in Cracking Your Church's Culture Code, the most important aspect of an organization is not vision or strategy, it is culture. Now that's pretty big. He actually goes on to say that culture eats vision for lunch. I think he says breakfast. I think it, like, vision doesn't even make it to lunch. It gets ate by breakfast. But, like, the truth is culture is extremely important. Like, culture is the personality of an organization, right? We were talking before we got started here. If you walk into a grocery store that's, like, say you're predominantly American, and then you walk into, like, a Korean grocery store, you automatically know you're in a different culture. Or if you walk into a funeral home, like very rarely in my ministry or my life have I walked into a funeral home and been like, woohoo, let's party. Like it just is not the culture. There's a culture of grieving or a culture that's solemn in a funeral home. But then the flip side of that, we have a place locally here in our area called Great Wolf Lodge. Now, I know they have those all over the place, but when we walk into Great Wolf Lodge with my kids, there's a different culture there. It's excitement, and, like, it's hard to keep them standing still because the culture of the place is different. And so culture really is key if we're going to – understanding culture is key if we're going to have ministries that are effective for Jesus.
So culture is not what you say. Culture is not what you put on the wall. Culture is how your church is going to react when certain things happen.
Dude, that's so good. Say that again now. Come on, say again.
Now you got me.
Should have wrote it down.
Yeah.
Culture is how your church is going to react when certain things happen.
Yeah.
And I think Colby, I don't know if this is the right place, but Colby has a couple stories of reaction when he walked in looking for something recently.
Yeah.
You might want to share. Is this a good time for that? Am I messing
up? No, it's not a good time, Joey.
Okay,
but
I'm sorry.
My goodness. Here we go. Yeah,
that's kind of set it up and let the cat out of the bag. So I don't know. Maybe the listeners aren't aware of this, but I do CrossFit. And
wait. Stop. I had black coffee today.
Yes. And don't you feel more manly?
I do not. Yeah. I just, but do you notice I had to tell people that?
I just finished my cup of black coffee.
Like, I don't feel more manly. Yeah. I don't feel more superior, but I did have to stop you so I could tell everybody
that you had black coffee. Yeah. So I do CrossFit in case you didn't know. I am legally obligated to tell everybody. And, taking a drink and it came out of his nose.
When you sign up, right? Yeah. Yeah.
I literally just spit my water out.
So a pastor friend of mine and I, we were looking for, CrossFit gyms. He went to two, I went to two. And, I went into one and, I walked in and the lady, the owner of it, she said, "Can I help you?" And I was like, "Yeah, you know, again, we're looking to join CrossFit. You know, we want to do this. It's me and a friend of mine." And she looked me up and down. Now, I'm a bit on the husky side. And she looked me up and down and said, "Well, you're going to have to come here 4 or 5 times a week to make anything happen." And now, didn't ask about goals, didn't ask anything else. The first thing out of her mouth was, "You need to be here 4 or 5 times a week to make anything happen." And I just looked at her and I said, "You're lucky I really don't do Facebook reviews because you would not be getting a positive one." And I turned around and walked out.
I can't wrap my mind around
that. That was the mentality. That was the culture was you have to be one of these gym freaks, these CrossFit Games people that this is what you have to be in order to come into this place. And then my friend Scott, he went into one and they were so excited to see him and could not wait to meet me. So they signed us up and said, "Hey, come on. We want you to do the three classes and then get into a class and get going." And we've been there almost 6 months and it's just the total different culture of the place. The one place was all about you have to look a certain way. And that's what's intimidating to a lot of people that think they can't do CrossFit. My whole class at 6 o'clock in the morning is people that do CrossFit they're not athletic freaks. They're normal people and as normal as we can be. But at 6 o'clock in the morning, right? But there's a 5 o'clock class too that's pretty full. So the idea here is the culture is one was more about how can we serve you to help you meet your goals? And the other one was how can you help us become the greatest CrossFit box in the world?
Yeah. And I think that's key. Because what you just said, and I hope that our listeners picked that up. They're smarter than we are, so I'm sure they picked it up well before I did. Well, what you just said is that the culture of the organization impacted you as a consumer.
Yes, it did. Absolutely did.
And we as small church pastors, we hate using the phrase consumers because we're always like, "Man, you're called to be a producer in the kingdom of God, not a consumer." But before someone becomes a producer at your church, guess what they are first?
Mm-hmm.
First, they're consumers. They're seeing how's your kids' ministry? How's your music? How's your preaching? How's your everything? How's your parking lot? How's all of this? And so I think that one of the places where I've missed it in my life is I've griped about people being consumers instead of playing to that. Like, people are consumers, so I need to make sure my culture is consumer friendly, but also that my culture helps put them on a journey so they can become something different.
And that one culture said, you can never belong to this. You're an outsider. You're not welcome here. This is not for you, and sent you away. Yeah. The other one says, "Hey, we can do this together.
Yeah.
Come on in."
Yeah.
And what is
you're
our culture?
Outsider versus you're already part of the family. Yeah, I love that.
And how many of our churches are like that? When somebody comes in and you're an outsider, you're a sinner, we can't have you in here. You need to go sit in that side of the sanctuary or sit in that pew or whatever. And then how many of our churches are like, "Well, we were waiting for you.
Right.
Welcome to the family."
Right, right. I love that. And here's the thing, small church leaders. Culture is kind of an amalgamation of everything you do. And so your youth ministry, your choir, your praise team, your guest services or your greeters, your ushers, all of those things roll in together to create your culture. And so one thing that we've seen happen in my life, in my ministry over the years, is that I'll put the phrases up on the wall or I'll preach a message on vision, right? And here's who we're going to be as a church. But until we execute those things, we're going to default to who we are. There's a thing about pilots. Pilots are, there's this phrase that goes this, in an event of an emergency, you will fall to the level of your training. You don't rise to the level of the occasion. So in other words, pilots are overtrained in all these different, what if this happens? What if you lose an engine? What if it's a lightning storm? Whatever it is, they're trained in all these different things, because if it happens in real time when they're 30,000 foot in the air, they're going to fall to the level of their training. They're not going to rise to the level of the occasion. We like to think the other way for us is our churches, don't we? That our churches are going to rise. They're going to be evangelistic. We're going to be servant-hearted people. But it's the same like 10 or 15 or 20 people that are doing the whole work for everybody else. Or yeah, Kobe's holding up three fingers. Like, it's the same three people that are doing it all. And honestly, in many of our cultures, if we were to step back and look at it, we would see, man, what we're saying is not what we're selling. And people are buying what we're selling, not what we're saying. And there's a disconnect there. And so in this episode, we want to talk about six core truths of a healthy culture. So Joey, why don't you just give us those bullet points real quick? What are those six core truths? And then we'll unpack those as we go on.
Number one, empower everyone.
Empower who?
Everyone.
Everyone.
Number two, people-centered.
People are sinners.
Well, some of them are, and then all of them are.
Some of them.
All of them are, but centered.
People-centered, okay.
All right. Three, values-driven.
Values-driven, that's good.
Number four, we is greater than me.
Ooh, I like that.
Number five, embrace accountability. Ooh.
Don't like that one.
That one must have got deleted off of my paper, because I don't have that one on.
Yeah, let's mark that one out.
Number six, ridiculous grace.
Ooh, okay, so I like that we're ending on a good note there.
Yeah.
So these six things, man, like out of those six, which one jumped out the most to you, Colby?
People-centered.
People-centered.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. What about you, Joey? Which one jumped out the most to you?
We is greater than me.
We is greater than me. For me, the one that jumped out the most was empower everyone. And, man, these are just six core truths. Now, you implement these however you feel like God's speaking to you. But when you zoom out and kind of look at your church, look at your ministry from a 30,000 foot, from a big picture perspective, these core truths are key to a healthy culture. So let's just break these down. So the first truth is empower everyone. Now, the question that goes with this is really a powerful one, I think. Are we giving away ministry, or are we hoarding ministry? Now, are we giving it away to people in our church, or are we just holding on to it? And I think about that old movie, Finding Nemo. Now, this shows how old I am when I talk about Finding Nemo. It's like 25 years old or whatever. But
not that old.
There was like, hey, we should Google it on the middle of this and see how old it is. Because it's pretty old. Like, it may not be 25 years old, but there's that one character that, like, gets all the bubbles. And he's like, my bubbles. These are my bubbles. My bubbles. My bubbles. Well, that's kind of what we do in ministry. We hoard ministry. It's, this is my seat. This is my ministry.
2003.
Bro. Do the math. It's 2022.
That was just a
couple
years ago.
That's 19 years.
It's just a couple years ago.
That's 19 years, bro.
Just a couple years ago.
19 years, Broseph.
That's just a couple years ago.
So
wow.
Wow. We're going to have to stop this episode because we aged exponentially.
I'm going to get my walker real quick.
So, yeah. So we're getting, what is it? The AARP cards.
Yeah,
or like,
right?
Somebody's sending them in the mail right now. So are we giving away ministry, or are we hoarding ministry? When we empower everyone, we have to give away responsibility, give away opportunities, give away leadership. How have you guys seen that work in your ministries?
Well, we got the big eyes going right there. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I would say when I first started here at the church, I was running everything. And so I was not empowering anybody to do anything. I was empowering them to ask me. And that's what I was giving them.
Oh,
so,
man. Wait a minute. I was empowering them to ask me, like how?
Right. So they could not make decisions, on the ministries without coming to me. And it wasn't so much that was my plan. That was just kind of the culture here.
Yeah.
That had gone on. And the culture that I was part of in another church was the same way, because in our denomination, the churches are congregationally led. So the congregation makes the decisions on everything, but the pastor kind of,
he's the sign off, the final authority.
He's the final authority. So that was more of the style when I first got here was, and of course in the Air Force, it was like, you know, you do what I tell you to do and, right. and that's how things are going to roll. And it's so exhausting.
Yeah.
I wasn't given away the authority to do ministry. I was hoarding the authority to do ministry. They could do it as long as I told them yeah. that they could
that's
do
so
it.
So exhausting too.
It is. It wore me out yeah. and it took me no time at all to realize that was yeah. the stupidest way to do to be the pastor, yeah. To be the head leader in the church was exhausting, and I couldn't keep up with it.
And sadly, that's how a majority of small churches are.
Yeah.
The majority of small churches, everything has to filter back through the pastor. And maybe some people inherited a system like you did that was at one time that way. Maybe some people just, they've been burnt so many times by people saying they're going to do it and not getting the job done. So it's like, well, doggone it, I'm going to do it myself. But that's just not the most healthy way to do it. We want to encourage you, build a culture that empowers everyone. So the next one, the number two thing is...
Can I say this about...
You can say it. Absolutely, you can say it.
About empowering everyone within their ability.
Okay.
Yeah, now, don't set up people to fail.
Okay. So here's a question then that I love that because I think that that's one place where we can kind of set people up to fail. We can put way too much on them and overload them. How do you balance that with kind of giving people just enough of a challenge to help them grow?
To stretch them, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You give them tasks, you give them assignments, and then you follow up on it. Don't expect what you're not going to inspect.
Yeah.
And that's probably where I fail at this a month because I don't want to have to go back and inspect it. I don't want to take the time. It's easier just to do it the first time myself and not have to. But then they're not growing. Yeah, they're not learning. They're not getting better at it.
So would you say that we talk about the push-down principle? If somebody can do something 70% as good as I can, push it down. I was just in a training where they said if they can do it 50% as good as you with the potential to grow to 70%, push it down. So would you say in order to not set somebody up for failure, you would give them just a little bit more than, say, they're at right now so that you can walk them through that?
Yeah, and then follow up. You got to have the things that we hate, those meetings. How did it go? What did you learn this week? What would you do different? What questions that you might have that I can help with? Those type of things. Yeah.
Those evaluation meetings are so important. I'm currently going through 4 Disciplines of Execution. Fantastic book. We're going to do a couple podcasts on that. Just FYI, that's some good stuff. And that's one of the things he says, give people a starting line, finish line, and deadlines. Mm. And that's following up with it. I love that. Okay, so let's move on to number two. Number two core truth of a healthy culture is that they are people-centered. Now, one of you said that one stuck out to you. Was that you,
Cody? That one stuck out to me, yeah. So I don't like people. and it sounds bad for a pastor. So let me set the scene. This past week, my wife and I were on vacation. She went out and killed the Disney Princess Half Marathon.
Go, Marnie!
She was awesome. And I was around a lot of people. And I do not like being around a lot of people. The Disney parks are just insanity. People everywhere. The happiest place on earth? Not true. You should see the parents. There is sermon material. Pastor, if you need sermon material, take a trip down to Disney World. And you will get sermon material on parenting, child abuse. I mean, these parents, they spent big money, and their kids are tired and want to go back to the hotel. But we're going to ride It's a Small World after all, again, because we spend all that money. So when we're talking people-centered, the reason why it stuck out the most to me is because it's not easy
being cheesy.
It's not easy being people centered for me because I like people, but I only like a small group.
Yeah.
I don't like crowds. I don't know if it's my military background. I don't know what it is, but I just don't like big crowds. And so being people-centered is difficult for me, so I have to work at being people-centered to care about people as I'm talking to them. I mean, you take Disney, for instance. They are people-centered. That's their thing.
Yeah.
And they go out of their way. The culture down there is all about the people and the experience. And so I'm sure they had to work hard at it to begin with. And so as a small church, I really have to work hard on being people centered, not ducking down a back hallway to get away from a crowd of people that I'm pretty sure are waiting to hear from me or talk to me after church, or, you know, I gotta be around the people, and I have to get out of my way to get there because I just don't like being around crowds.
Yeah. The hard mix about being in a small church environment is that there are tasks that have to be accomplished in order to make Sunday happen.
Yeah.
You have to have a sermon. You should probably have some music. You should probably have something for kids, even if that's something for, maybe you don't have a dedicated kids ministry, but you let your kids sit in the main sanctuary and they have like an activity, that coloring activity that goes along with the service, whatever it is. Those are tasks that have to be accomplished. Well, we also have to fill those roles, those tasks, with people who are going to accomplish it while also being there for people. And so it's either are you so task driven that you overlook people, or are you so people driven that you overlook the tasks? And this is a tension that is always going to be there. And so the kind of heart behind this, this value of being people's driven is being people driven is making sure that like we're ambassadors for the kingdom of heaven. And so maybe the PowerPoint's not quite right this week, but I'm not cussing out my PowerPoint guy because it didn't get quite right this week. You know what I'm saying? Like,
So
Joey and I were in a training one time where somebody forgot to get a parking lot paved for, or not paved, but scraped, cleared from snow. And the guy was like, well, on average, we have like $30,000 tithe and offering that are given on a weekend. This was a big church. And the guy said, and you just learned a $30,000 mistake. So if you do it again, you're fired. And I'm like, wow, holy cow. Like, that is intense. And from a business standpoint, I can understand that. Hey, you just cost us some money. But also the flip side of that, it's like, it was kind of a mistake. And if clearing a parking lot out for a ministry that brings in 30 grand a week is only falling on one person, there's probably a bigger problem than that one person.
Well, the leader was out of town, and if I remember right, they made the call to cancel church instead of had church. And he said, no, you should have got the parking lot cleared, and we had church, but he was out of town. And so he didn't empower his leaders to make a decision.
Yeah, and then when you come in and you undermine that decision, then you've undermined rule number one of empowering everyone. Because what you've said is, I'm giving you the ability to make the choice. Whoops, you made the wrong choice, so you're fired now. And everybody who didn't get fired goes, holy crap, as soon as I mess up, I'm on the chopping block too. And that's no way to create a healthy culture.
Yeah.
All right, so number three is values-driven. Values-driven. Here's the reality, guys. Everything we do, Sunday morning, Monday morning, Tuesday, everything we do. Now, our big day is Sunday. Some churches still have Sunday night. Just fine. That's good. I wish we still had Sunday night sometimes. Some churches have Wednesday. Some churches have small groups. Some churches have outreach groups. Whatever it is, everything you do communicates something that you value. So when you have a Sunday morning service, what you're communicating that you value is people gathering together on the Lord's Day. When you have a dedicated kids ministry, what you're saying that you value is kids having an environment where they can get the gospel on their level. Now, I have friends who don't have a dedicated kids ministry. Their kids ministry are in the sanctuary on Sunday morning, and here's the value they dedicate. We want our kids to be part of big church so that when they grow up and are part of big church, they don't have that shock that, ooh, this is totally different from what I was used to in kids or youth ministry or whatever. So the short version is everything we do says that we value something. So when you take a look back at what your church does, what does that say that you value?
Exactly. Values are not, again, it's not something we write down or wish that we had. Values, if you can't point to it lived out in how you do things in the life of the church, then it's not a value.
Right. Yeah.
It's a wish.
We often say, man, we're going to be Great Commission Christians. Okay. Show me three things that happen regularly that prove that you're fulfilling the Great Commission.
I love what you got here. It says healthy cultures write their mission on the heart, not the wall.
That's it.
That is such a powerful statement right there.
Yeah.
Because we like to, I mean, I've got them on my walls here. I've got our mission statement right when you walk in, it's smacking you in the face. Our core values are on the walls, but they mean nothing if there's not action put
That's
to them.
That's it. Yeah. And so maybe you're listening to this and you're like Colby. You say, hey, man, I got my mission statement on the wall. Are you guys telling me that that's stupid? No. That's not what we're saying. We're saying that's not the end game.
It blows my mind that it's been there for – we've put it up there like 4 years ago. I say the mission statement just – not just about – every Sunday, I say the mission statement at least once in the welcome, but I also usually get it into the sermon as well. Yeah,
that's and good.
Man. I had somebody yesterday totally blow it up and had no clue how to, what it was. And I'm like, you've been here longer than me.
Yeah.
How do you not know the mission statement? Yeah. It just blows my mind.
Because
it's on the wall, it's not on their heart.
Right. We need to do an entire episode on just how much you have to repeat stuff before people finally start embracing that.
What's that?
Yeah, we need to do an entire episode. Yeah. See, this is something, again, four disciplines of execution. They're like, one of the things we have to do is we have to get more people around the table that have buy-in, because people aren't going to break down for what they haven't bought in for.
Yeah.
And, man, a lot of times it's easy for us to be like Moses and go to the top of the mountain and come down with the vision tablets and be like, you better listen to these. But what we end up doing is not liking what they're doing and throwing the vision tablets at them and breaking them, if that can be allegorically interpreted that way. And man, as we get more people connected to the values that they care about, that matter to them and that matter to God, man, we're on the same team for a larger vision.
Yeah, if you can point to your church life and you see that value in action, then it's truly a value.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, we value the lost, okay? If a lost person who was not churched came into your church service, would they feel like they were absolutely lost? And I don't mean lost spiritually. I mean, would they feel like, ooh, I don't know what in the world's going on here? I read a book several years ago. I think it was Tom Rainer that said it, but he said that most churches should charge admission prices for people to come in and see what church looked like before World War II. Because the style of ministry in our churches and the way our buildings are designed and built and the way we do church looks like a bygone era. And so people, the lost come in, like, it's just important. If you say you value the lost, let your culture show that you value the loss. Okay, so the fourth one, with six things we got to talk about here, is we is greater than me. The question is, are we team first? Are we team first, or are we all about us? There's this great line that I heard a few years ago: what I'm part of is bigger than the part I play. And I'm just going to say that one more time, because I don't think you heard it. What I'm part of is bigger than the part I play. You hear the crowd cheering over how awesome that line is? We is greater than me. So here's a question. Is your culture a team-first culture?
This is the one that you said stuck out to you, isn't it,
It
Joey?
Stuck out to me because I need to work on it. Not, not because I got it down. Whoa. No, I need to work on this.
Joey's like, stay in your lane, Toby.
Well, I was just trying to buy time for me to make come up with my answer. I would say we are, as a church, we are we know that we're part of something bigger than us, because we are – and I say it all the time, and I know this church has actually bought into it, is we're not in competition with other churches. We know that we are on the same team as Bible-believing, God-fearing, Jesus-loving churches. And so, we're part of this, we're part of that. And so, just as a church, we know that we're part of something bigger. And so we've embraced that, and we do help other churches out with different things.
Yeah.
Inside our walls, we step up, we help each other in different things. We've found some things where we weren't doing that, and we've adjusted with those. But yeah, I think overall we do a pretty good job here at First Friends.
I love that. Did you hear that? We found some things that we weren't living up to that, which goes back to what we just talked about. We have a value of teamwork and mm-hmm. togetherness. We saw some actions aren't living up to that, so we're adjusting that. Yeah. So the last two are connected together. I love that.
Yeah, this is a constant rub in a lot of churches, that we don't create silos, that the children's ministry don't begin thinking they're the most important ministry the church.
Yes.
Or the women's ministry or whatever, and then get stuck in that mode where now if it does not directly impact them or help them, they're not going to get involved
yeah.
and realize there's a bigger picture where we all work together.
That's so good. Thing. Yeah. I have a friend who has three kids. Two of them are twins. And the friend of mine looks a lot like me. And it Poor happens guy. All the time with those kids. They'll say something like, "This is not fair. He got to do this." And that's what happens when we create silos. Mm-hmm. Silos is all about me. But the this value is we is greater than me. We're all on this thing together. The fifth thing is to embrace accountability.
I got
to
step out real
quick. I'm going to leave for this section.
We got that thing we got to go do right now, right? That one thing we got to do.
Get done.
Yeah, holler at us when you're done with this one.
I'll holler at you when I'm done. Okay, so here's the question for this. Now, you guys need to sit down and strap up for this one. Are we asking the hard questions or making excuses?
Right.
Are we asking the hard questions or making excuses? Can I just be honest for a second? I've spent a lot of the last few years just making excuses. Well, here's why we can't do that. Here's why this didn't work. Here's why these people stopped attending. There's a, just like we did that podcast several weeks ago, that with every pound of criticism, there's an ounce of truth. With every pound of excuses, there is an ounce of truth, but that doesn't mean that we need to keep making excuses. Like, we say we're the Church of Jesus. We say that we're a ministry that exists for people to help them find God. However, we all say that in our individual contexts. For me, it's helping people move forward with God. For you, I think you switched yours now to meeting people where they are with the hope of Jesus Christ, right?
And love. And love
hope and love of Jesus Christ. And you are awakening people to life at its fullest. Is that
Making
correct?
Life to its fullest.
Awakening life to its fullest. I'm close. I'm mm-hmm. sorry.
You know it better than that person that tried to say it for my church the other day.
Yeah, well, just have them come hang out with me. I'll right. tell them to learn your mission. But, like, the thing is with that is at some point I got to stop and look. Am I really helping people move forward with God? Like, am I doing that? Or am I just having church services for other Christians and we're not helping people move forward with God? Like, we got to embrace accountability. We got to ask hard questions.
I had one of my leaders sit down this week, look me in the eyeballs and go, "How are we moving towards abundant life as a church and a school?" And
ouch. Ouch.
I love that.
Because that's where we get awaken life to its fullest. Uh-huh. It's off John 10:10. I've come to give life and life more abundantly. How are we moving to abundant life as a church and a school?
I love Ooh. That you got a leader that had the guts to ask you that question. Yeah. I mean, that is,
and
that
also is awesome. Kudos to Joey for obviously creating an environment
and not where, stabbing
where
the person.
People could come in and ask, well, he hasn't said that he hadn't stabbed him yet. So he might not say that because we're recording. But he's created an environment, too, where people feel like they can yeah. approach you.
Well, yeah. Now, of course, I almost had to call for bail money. Just full disclosure, I almost got a phone call. Can y'all come bail me out? No. That's man, what a great question. Thank you for asking that question so we can look at that and evaluate that. That's what I said out loud. When I was feeling myself, that's what I said out loud. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got.
Well, how did you answer him? I want to know how you answered him now.
Well, I said we are doing our fundamentals for this year, where we started at the beginning of the year. Each week we're building on our fundamentals. Fundamentals are word for the year for the church. And so I started out, I read a chapter a day of Proverbs, and we started that. Then okay, now what is God saying to you out of that? And slowly build that. We're into prayer, adding a different thing. Where's your prayer space? Where do you meet God at a regular time, regular basis? And we're building yeah. that. Okay, out of that prayer, how is he guiding you? Let him speak to you about situations you got going on this week. We're going to get into fasting. We're going to get in solitude. And so I said, we're moving to abundant life one week at a time by taking people through these fundamentals, yeah. trying to build yeah. something in them.
So you're walking people through discipleship via spiritual disciplines. Mm-hmm. And that's how they're, but while they're connecting with God on a deeper level, then they're living out their abundant life.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that. I like that, man. So he had somebody confront him about it. Here's accountability. And accountability can hurt.
No,
here's
yes.
something, small church leader, accountability can feel like an attack. And we've got to be just careful. Sometimes people ask accountability questions that are attacks. Can we be honest enough to say some people do attack with accountability questions? But here's the thing. Whether or not it's an attack, we still need to be held accountable, right? Mm-hmm. Whether or not somebody comes in the right spirit, we still should regularly look at what we're doing and see if we're – because here's what I know. Jesus one time said that, you know, somebody was given five talents, somebody was given two or three, and somebody was given one. And the person who gave the talents out eventually came back and called to account where they were. And we're going to be called to account for how we've led our churches, and every Christian in the world is going to be called to account for how they live their lives, right? And what we want to do is before the account manager shows up, Jesus, and is like, okay, what'd you do with what I gave you? We want to regularly throughout the year just stop, circle the wagons, and embrace accountability. Hey, we said we're awakening life to its fullest. Here's how we've been doing that. Here are the metrics. We've had a good idea, but we haven't been able to fully embrace that. Only 30% of the people are doing that, or whatever that looks like. It's just important to embrace accountability. Because at the end of the day, nobody bats 1,000, right? And for those of you that don't know what that means that nobody hits 10 out of 10 times whenever they get up to the plate. We all have times where we miss it, where we strike out. So accountability is key. So here's a question, and maybe we don't answer it. Maybe you think about it. What happens inside your soul when you think about accountability? And let's move on to number 6, which is the last one. And we need number 6 at this time. Ridiculous grace. All of this has to have ridiculous grace. A healthy culture answers this question the correct way. Are we handling this situation like Jesus or like the Pharisees? Can I tell you something that amazes me, guys? I followed Jesus half of my life, and most of my time, I look more like the Pharisees than like Jesus. That amazes me. If you were to look, let's go to embrace accountability. If I were to have to be accountable with how I act, think, and sometimes treat people, it would look like I'm a disciple of a Pharisee more than I'm a disciple of Jesus. I need to give people some ridiculous grace. And you know what the crazy thing is? I expect ridiculous grace from God. Why in the world shouldn't I give it to other people?
And we expect it from other people.
Oh, no, you shut your face when you're talking to me. You're absolutely right. I expect other people to give me ridiculous grace. Yeah. Man.
We do. We make errors sometimes. We mess up. And we expect that ridiculous grace from other people. But doggone it, I don't have enough to give to you.
Yeah.
You didn't meet this deadline. You didn't do this thing. You said you were, yeah. You don't, you're not part of the part that I need you to be the part of.
I think about, for me, like how many times I've failed at meeting a deadline that I've set up. And I've just been like, oh, it's okay, Brian. You had this going on, this going on, this going on. It's okay. You can do the next one. Like, we've got to give that same grace to people. I mentioned that story a little earlier about the parking lot being scraped from the snow and all of that. Is $30,000 a big deal? Yeah, $30,000 is a big deal. But, man, we got a ridiculous grace. And you know what? You know how much ridiculous grace costs us? Being nailed to a cross. That's what it costs us. My mom would say it this way about me all the time, that I have my butt on my shoulders. And she wouldn't say it that sanctified way, but like we gotta get our rear ends off of our shoulders and start giving people grace, man. This is something that's been a hard truth for me to learn. But the truth is, there are people that are on my team that are dealing with stuff, and they bring that stuff into how they lead. And I'm sitting from a prognosticator's perspective of, well, you just need to trust the Lord and yabba dabba do. Here I'm, you know, God loves you. You got this. When maybe their world is falling apart right now and they don't know what's happening. I had a situation just this Sunday where somebody on my staff came to me and he's like, man, I just got to be honest with you. I don't want to sing today. I'm just not feeling it. Today's rough. This has been a tough week. And are you okay if I sit down? And I was upset, and I was upset for two reasons. One, I don't want to do what I'm doing today either. Like I had my drummer was out, so I had to jump behind the drums with no rehearsal whatsoever. Thank God I'm a pretty decent musician, was able to switch over fairly quickly, but I didn't want to be playing drums. And so I wanted to be like, well, no, we're all sacrificing and doing stuff like Christmas Vacation. Like, I don't know. It's Christmas and we're all in misery, right? Like that was my first reaction. And then my second reaction was this, dude, you're a leader. And if you're, quote, not feeling it and then don't serve, how are people that look to you going to feel when they're not feeling it? And so that's what's going on in my mind immediately. Okay. Now, by the way, this is 3 minutes before the service starts. Okay. And so you know how I handled it? I took one deep breath because I didn't have time to take two. I took one deep breath and I said, you know what, man? What do you think the best way to handle this is? And I just threw it back to him. Like Jesus, he often did that, didn't he?
Empowering him.
Threw it back down. Empowered him, yeah. Like, what do you think the best thing to do is? And he's like, it's just rough, man. I don't know. And I said, okay, well, let me share with you something. And I shared with him point two that I just said. So, hey, man, you're a leader and people look to you. And so what, and he leads one of our small groups too. Like, so what would you do if somebody called you this week and said, man, I'm just not coming to small group because I'm not feeling it? How would you counsel that person? And he started smiling because he knew I had him. And I was like, yes, yes, Kobe, I did it, right? And he's like, yeah, I would probably tell them they need to fight through it. And I was like, so, and then I knew I was right. I know that's the right call. And I know that push was what he needed. I absolutely know. Spirit-led decision. But even though I knew all of that, I still did this. But, man, I trust that you can hear from God. And if you really feel like you need to step down today, I'll support your decision. Here's what I think as a leader. Here's what I think as your friend. And here's how I'm empowering you to make the decision. And you know what he did? He sang. And not only did he sing, he did our transition. And in the transition, he said, man, I got to be honest with you guys. Today was a rough day. But you know what? God showed up. And he turned that moment into a moment of ministry. And I got to tell you, man, Brian 2 years ago, Brian 10 years ago would have nailed him to the wall. I mean, I would have nailed him to the wall. I would not have given ridiculous grace. And I say this is a long way to say, when we give ridiculous grace, we're helping people grow into the role. And we're not being condemning of them if they don't already have it together. And so that's just key, man. That's so key and so important. So, Joey, will you give us those six again, those bullet points, so we can recap that as we close out today?
Empower everyone. Two, be people-centered. Three, value-driven. Four, we is greater than me. Five, embrace accountability. And six, ridiculous grace.
Man, I think this has been a good episode. And listen up, Small Church Leadership Nation. These are six core truths of a healthy culture. You can take these and retrofit them to whatever culture it is that you're in. This isn't just ministry, right? Like, if these things work for your marriage, they work for your job, they work for wherever you're at. Like, you learn to empower people, learn to be a team player. We's greater than me. Embrace accountability. Like, all of these things are core truths to a healthy culture. And so that's today's episode. As we prepare to close out today, Kobe, is there something super awesome and interesting and amazing you'd like to share with everybody that will radically and forever change their lives?
They need to do CrossFit like I do.
But find the right gym.
Find the right box. CrossFit places are called boxes.
Oh, see, gyms. There we go. Okay, so never mind.
Just your free lesson today. Kobe. Anyway, let's go to something for the small church leadership people out there. Go to Facebook. And type in the search bar, Small Church Leadership. You will find us and connect with us. Talk to us. Tell us what's going on in your life. Maybe we can do a podcast on it. Maybe we can start a conversation over social media to help you get through some things. You know what? Even if you need some prayer, just throw it up there, and we'll pray for you. Don't get too specific if you don't want to, but that's what we can do.
And if you would do me a favor, and as you're listening to this podcast, before you leave this area, will you please go and give us a 5-star rating? Help us. And then also share it with somebody else that might could be a value for them if you'll share it with them.
Yeah, that would be very, very helpful out. Helpful out. Guys, my words quit working.
Well, I was contagious there. So
that's
apparently.
What it was. Yeah, that would be helpful if you could connect with us via social media and also give us a rating, give us a review. Let us know that you think we're the best podcast that you've ever heard, called Small Church Leadership Podcast with Brian, Kobe, and Joey. Okay, so that way you don't have to tell a lie. Okay, so guys, we really appreciate you. Hey, the next episode is going to be exciting. The next episode is going to be very much needed as well. The next episode, we are going to be talking about dealing with hurt in ministry. If you've been in ministry for any stretch of time, there have been things that have the potential to hurt you, or in many cases have in fact hurt you. Just this week, I was with someone who is now a former youth pastor, And he's no longer a part of a church anywhere because he has some bitterness going on for some things that happen in the church. I always say people who say sticks and stones will, how's the saying go? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Clearly, they never went to church, did they? Because some words can hurt and people in church can be hurtful. So what we're going to do over the next at least one episode is talk about bitterness, talk about pain. Talk about what it means to live through that hurt in ministry and how you and I, how we can process that so we can be, you ready for a preacher statement? So we can be better and not bitter. Come on, somebody. Hey, yeah. So until then, this has been the Small Church Leadership Podcast, the podcast where we are prayerfully, hopefully, and absolutely helping the small church fulfill the big mission. My name's Brian.
I'm Joey.
And I'm Colby.
And we shall see you next time. We love you guys. Bye now.